You know, Kevin, I was doing a little research the other day.
What about?
It was on one of my favorite subjects from childhood and high school, and let's face it, today even, Greek mythology.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I'm a big Greek mythologist. I just find it absolutely fascinating, and I find all of the tales to be full of really contemporarily relevant morals that just really speak to me as a person.
Sure.
You know? And I was reading Bullfinch's mythology, and I came across something that I had never come across before. You know, the introductions and the postscript and the epilogues to most books, and I don't normally read those because I think I just want the meat of the story.
Right, right.
So this time I decided, you know, on my fifth read of Bullfinch's, that I'd go ahead and read the foreword. And I read about this story about this man that I'd never heard of before, and he's a real historical figure. And his name was Blasphemus the Bold.
Mm.
He was apparently the original blasphemer. It's where the word blasphemy comes from.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Absolutely.
And you'd never heard of him before.
Never heard of him, and I never really thought about blaspheming the Greek gods because they were pretty tough to blaspheme in those days.
I mean, that's why blasphemy didn't really catch on until later religions came around, right?
Yeah, the Mesopotamians didn't really have it. The Hebrews didn't really have it for a particularly long period of time. Aztecs didn't really have it. Yeah, that's pretty much all the religions back in those days, and none of them really had blasphemy as the problem. But Blasphemus was, much to his namesake, quite bold, and he discovered that there was certainly a way. But his first attempt was a total disaster. He went up to the Temple of Zeus, and there's a big statue of Zeus sitting there, and Blasphemus walks up to him, and he lifts up his tunic, and he shows him his rump, and he shouts, "Look at my fanny, Zeus!" And he expected a big reaction. He expected lightning. He expected thunder. He expected
a
the seas to
a
heart attack for his children to be murdered. No, none of that. Zeus liked it. Zeus thought it was funny. The gods
probably
back in
thought
those,
it was a nice butt.
But the problem was, that's not blasphemy. If a god doesn't like it, that's blasphemy. But if a god's okay with it and finds it really funny, well, who cares? You know, not a big deal at all.
Right.
So he had to get creative. He went to the temple of Aphrodite, where you were supposed to offer a sticky sacrifice upon her altar, which, if you haven't seen it, is essentially just like a large, beautiful woman's face with its mouth open, just kind of like mounted on the ground. So he went up there, and he didn't do it. He blasphemed this goddess by not complying with her stated wishes.
Wow.
So I, being a really big fan of Greek mythology and feeling in a strange way as if these gods were my heroes, felt like I had to make things up for Blasphemus. I had to make it up to Aphrodite. So I went to the Temple of Aphrodite, as I usually go to exotic locales for our research for these episodes.
Right.
And I went to offer a sticky sacrifice. I went with a sheet of hundreds of heart-shaped Valentine's Day stickers.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I know, right? So I just started slapping them all over her face, because I guess that was what I was supposed to do. It just kind of made sense to me.
Seems like something she would be right up her alley, you know?
Yep. Instantly thrown in jail.
In Greece?
Yeah.
Grecian jail?
Instantly thrown in Greek prison. It was really, really disturbing. And I was like, why? I was not blaspheming her. I was respecting her. You should not throw me in jail. And I realized, it's a Christian nation now. Her face was no longer aimed upward in anticipation of a sticky sacrifice. It was aimed upward in supplication to the Lord. And I disrespected her by slapping stickers on her face.
Yeah, by putting an obstacle between her and the Lord. That's a high level of sacrifice.
It was rude. And it made me think about blasphemy and Blasphemus. And it made me think, why not make an entire episode about this subject?
Where should we begin?
We talked earlier about it being really tough to be blasphemous.
Right, and that's usually with
older pagan
polytheistic religions were usually a little bit tougher. And one of the reasons for this was because the second that you go around, we're going to use Greece for example once again. The mm-hmm. second you go around saying like, oh, I really don't like that Zeus. He's really not making things go my way.
Neither does Hermes, so it's no big deal.
Hermes is not cool with Zeus right now. Or
Juno. She doesn't care.
Athena's got a thing against Zeus right now. They're not on good terms. So you
really, everybody's got a lot against Zeus, actually.
So if Zeus comes and smites you, you've got another god.
To be like, hey, it's cool, I'll turn you into a tree.
I'll turn you into a tree, you can stay on my couch for a while. A lot of the polytheistic gods were very much like...
They were very capricious.
Soap opera characters.
And for the people of Norway and ancient Northern Europe...
The Norse religions.
The Norse religions. It was especially difficult because the gods and their people just loved sinning. It was a really violent, warlike culture.
Well, wait a minute. Hang on. To say that they love sinning is a little bit dismissive and incorrect.
Because sinning is relative.
Exactly. By the standards of many of religions today, they loved sinning. But by the standards of their religion...
They were simply worshipping their god in the way they were supposed to.
They were exemplary.
They were great model citizens.
So tell me about the Norse gods.
Well, the Norse gods were pretty cool, actually. They were violent, terrifying, warlike, crazy. They had all sorts of strange powers, and they were actually very, very mortal. The Norwegians were a group of people who were converted to Christianity when a missionary told their priest that Jesus went to Asgard, which is Norse god heaven, and killed all their gods in a glorious battle. You should have been there, really. Ancient Druidic sources have quoted it, saying it was freaking awesome. So that gives you a pretty good idea.
That's a rough translation.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not too good with runes. I'm usually good with Greek script. Right. This was problematic, though, because it reveals that that culture was very warlike, and there weren't really a whole lot of sins to worry about. There weren't even a lot of laws to follow, either. So only the gods themselves knew how to blaspheme, right?
I mean, that's what I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Humans had run out of ideas. So I came across this ancient druidic script about this god named Balder, who is he's the Apollo of the religion. He's the handsome, cool god that everybody likes, that has all the poetry and plays all the musical instruments that the girls fawn after.
The goddesses are all about...
Mm-hmm. They're Balder. All about Balder.
Balder?
Sisters and mothers alike. Doesn't matter. He is handsome man. So Balder, who was the most charming and good-looking of all the gods, one night had a prophetic dream where he was killed in a most brutal fashion, and his mother, being the overprotective type, demanded that every single thing, that's every living thing on the planet...
Everything.
Every object from perhaps this glove or this glass cup to every strand of hair on Kay's head.
Right.
Swear never hurt Balder.
Or the microphone that Taylor is gently talking into.
Mm-hmm. Were Balder here today, the microphone would not be harming him in any way. Everything was okay with it, but she forgot to ask mistletoe.
Mistletoe.
Mm. You mm-hmm. think it's an innocent plant because you kiss under it.
And how can you forget it?
It's so obvious. It's dangling above every doorway in my house.
I know.
It makes walking through very difficult sometimes.
But enjoyable.
Definitely. So it's a plant. You know, what harm could it do?
Right.
So upon realizing that everything swearing not to hurt him made him essentially invincible, the other gods had a new pastime. It was loosely translated as throw things at Balder and watch them bounce harmlessly off of his mighty impervious frame. Loki, who is kind of the trickster god.
Uh-huh, he was the fun one. He's the mischievous mm-hmm. one. He was animal.
He was the animal. If the gods were Muppets, he would be animal, and I suppose Balder would be Kermit, or perhaps Gonzo. So Loki, the trickster god, took the mistletoe and made a spear out of it, and he gave it to the blind god, Hur. And they were all playing their throw things at Balder game. Mm-hmm. And Hur, he was never really allowed to wield a weapon, you know? He was
blind.
Blind.
He was blind. So they were like, let's not give him a spear. That would be dangerous.
They might be a little wacky, but they still had a sense of responsibility towards their fellow gods. Yeah. They didn't want a blind guy walking around with swords.
Right. And their children as well. They were concerned about that.
But in this case, it was okay. He was invincible. What harm's it gonna do? So Hur picked up that spear, and super excitedly, he hurled it with vigor. And by sheer chance, went right through Balder's heart. He died. The other gods were absolutely furious. But, you know, they didn't attempt to punish Loki. He's just too darn tricky. They kind of chuckled a little at it. So they have a funeral for Balder, and Loki performs a series of kind of small blasphemies At the funeral, he says a few lewd things to Baldur's widow, and the gods decide that enough is enough. It's time to punish you for what we don't have a word for blasphemy.
Right.
So they seem to have created actually a pretty effective punishment. They bound Loki to a rock and employed a viper to drip acid into his eyes for all eternity. Mm-hmm. His wife held a bowl under the snake to collect the venom, but sometimes she has to empty it, and then Loki just gets a face full of acid, and sometimes some spills out of the bowl and burns her hands for good measure. For some reason, this is in that last detail's in like every version of the myth. I'm not really sure why. But in any case, I think it's time for a word from our sponsors.
Hey, Taylor, how's your son?
Just fantastic. He's on the honor roll, he's going to the state spelling bee finals, and he was just elected class president.
Well, why are you so glum?
I can't seem to find him a pair of shoes that he'll wear. Kids' shoes nowadays are either fancy, expensive sports shoes, right, which my son doesn't play, hip, easily broken sandals, which he won't wear because of the ichthyosis on his feet, or they're filled with so many flashing lights that they often cause traffic accidents.
Have you tried Goody Two Shoes?
Goody Two Shoes?
Goody Two Shoes. They have all sorts of shoes for your academically superior child. Loafers, dress shoes, slippers, durable, handmade leather boots which will last a lifetime.
Sounds great. Also sounds expensive.
That's where you're wrong.
What?
I got my triplet daughters matching ruby red tap shoes that they look adorable in for only $60.
Wow. With deals like that, I'd be a negligent parent for not going to Goody Two Shoes.
Goody Two Shoes Kids Shoes, located off the exit 34 at Ridge Avenue's famous Mike's Mini Mall.
And we are back. And we're also going to come back to discussion of the Greeks again, but we're going to talk about it in a different context.
Absolutely. We're going to move on to a little guy named Xenophanes.
Xenophanes. He was the very first skeptic. And he is a good example of blasphemy, not because he offended the gods, which, as we've already mentioned, was really, really tough to do, but he offended the church, which is a different component of blasphemy. You can offend, blasphemy is generally defined as offending a god or disrespecting a deity of some kind.
Let's go ahead and define, Webster defines blasphemy as impious action, words, or thoughts towards a religious figure or religion in general.
Xenophanes?
Xenophanes, yeah.
Xenophanes was the first person to really offend the established church. The established Greek church, as we discussed, really loved their gods. They were silly, capricious, and kind of petty, very human.
They were a reason to have parties.
Yeah. You had Bacchus, who got drunk all the time. You had Aphrodite, who was rather promiscuous. You had Zeus, who turned into lots of animals and seduced lots of ladies as those animals.
You had Pan, who was making wonderful music on his flute.
Mm-hmm. You had all sorts of wacky, silly gods that just really knew how to have a good time.
The type of gods that you would want to come to your party.
Want to start your party.
You'd have a party in their name and just pray to them that they would come.
Come to the party and make it a blast. Make it a real rager. So Xenophanes himself said that he felt that the way the gods were portrayed in legends was really distasteful, and that it glorified negative parts of human behavior, which he felt were immoral. And for this, he was considered a blasphemer by the Greek church. So Xenophanes was exiled, and legend has it that Zeus, who had transformed into... I was so excited to read this. My favorite dinosaur, a pterodactyl.
Are you kidding me?
Uh-huh. There's a great illustration of it. It's on a pot and everything.
Of Zeus turning into a pterodactyl?
Yeah, there's
it's on a clay pot?
Yeah, it's kind of like... Have you ever seen the movie Werewolf?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks a bit like that, where he has this rage-filled face, and then he kind of hulks out into the form of a pterodactyl, and it's wonderful.
That's not only amazing, that must be an amazing work of art, but it's also just amazing to know that the Greeks were paleontologists, too.
Yeah, they invented pretty much everything, I think.
Well, I mean, everything that we in our Western culture base, our lives around.
But it was all burned down at the burning of the Library of Alexandria, so we lost a lot of that knowledge.
Right.
But we got this pot, and I was really happy to see it. So he turned into a pterodactyl and dashed Xenophanes upon the rocks of Mount Olympus. And the Greek gods loved ironic punishments, and Xenophanes, a lover of foie gras...
Goose liver, it's a delicacy.
...condemned Xenophanes to have his liver devoured by vultures over and over and over again for all eternity, and legend has it that this is also the first tourist attraction in history. I think we're dwelling a little bit too much in the past, and if you want to talk blasphemy, you can't do so without mentioning the Salem witch trials.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the problem with the Salem witch trials is we all read or saw The Crucible in high school, or were in The Crucible as John Proctor in high school, right. We all know the story of it, so I don't really want to go over that.
Well, if you think about it, the burning of the witches at the Salem witch trial were kind of a grand act of reverse blasphemy. Because what we have here is people who have been accused of being workers for the devil or have dark spirits. They're witches. They're in cahoots with Satan. And in an act of reverse blasphemy, the church hunts down these people, these like devil worshippers, and gets rid of them in a way to appease God.
Mm-hmm. In a very, usually very strange ways, they would soak them in water for long periods of time, drown them, really.
Sure. Well, I mean, if they floated, then they would be witches and they would be burned. And if they sunk and died, then they were human after all.
And they went to heaven. So England, the nation of England, got really, really tired of all these people dying and being punished for blasphemy. So they, in 1736, the English government issued the Witchcraft Act, and this made it a criminal offense to accuse anybody of witchcraft or say that they had magical powers.
It's a good thing David Blaine didn't live back then.
Oh, yeah. And that was a big problem, actually. Because of the aforementioned popularity of Halloween, this resulted in a record number of child imprisonments throughout the early Enlightenment.
Because when Halloween was just getting started, you know, people would, like a little girl would come to someone's house and say, trick or treat, and I'm a witch.
And the man would look at her, and he would go, witch! Accuse her.
Because she just self-accused herself of being a witch, which was a new law, and it was just broken.
Yeah, children were no exception, and the charges almost always went uncontested because the defendants, by their own utterance, had accused themselves. I think it was called reverse double jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, but I think almost always they didn't allow them to change clothes between the time they were accused themselves in the trial.
So they were usually dressed as a witch, which just made things a lot harder for the jury to accept.
Mm. Yeah, especially back then.
You know, I think we might be taking a little long. I think we could probably go to another commercial. I could sure use a snack.
I sure could use a beverage.
Oh, I could really go for some scratch lotto cards.
And I would love a pack of smokes.
Yeah, and some liquor.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I think so.
Speed Go! Whoa! Talk about a convenience store. They've got everything we wanted.
They even have gas.
And a bathroom.
The staff is so helpful and friendly.
And look, right now, get 3 sleeves of sunflower seeds for the price of 2. Sold!
And we were in and out in a jiff.
Anytime we need immediate satisfaction, just go Speed Go.
And we are back. Back from Speed Go ourselves.
So we've been talking a lot about these, a lot of these ancient religions, moving forward in time until we get to the modern day. We're going to take a little step back from
Salem. Way, way, way back.
We're going to go to the Aztecs now and talk about the Aztecs, Aztec gods. Now, the Aztec religion was
extremely violent.
Extremely violent, polytheistic as well, worth noting. And blasphemy, much like in Greece and in Egypt, just didn't stick because it's like, oh, well, I don't like Quetzalcoatl. That's all right, I've got this god over here who's
Mitoteca to protect me.
Mitoteca will protect me from Quetzalcoatl's wrath, so no big deal. But I just find it interesting that the gods of the Aztec religion were brutal and savage and bloodthirsty.
The Aztecs believed that the morning sun would not rise unless there were a certain number of human hearts dashed upon the temple, like their ziggurats.
Despite all that, and despite the fact that in order for there to be a human heart on the pedestal, it might be yours, or your son, or your daughter's, or your wife's, or your whoever, someone that you know. Despite that imminent danger, the Aztecs worshipped the shit out of their gods.
Absolutely, worshipped them like crazy. But it's weird, because if anybody had a right to be blasphemous, it was the Aztecs. Their gods clearly hated them.
Yeah, I mean, they were like, oh, yeah, you're not going to give me a human heart? Well, guess what? My sun's not going to rise tomorrow.
We're going to hold a weird form of Olympic game where the ball's a human head, and you all have to run around with giant clubs, and whoever is left standing at the end of it gets the glory of
getting killed.
Getting killed. It's a pretty good game.
But despite that, people practiced to be the best at that game. And it was
not only that, but they also created more gods to punish themselves with.
Oh, absolutely.
It's crazy. You have the aforementioned Mitoteca, the fire-breathing god of vengeance.
Right. Oh, you also have Bilotetek, the god of retribution.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also Ketek, the god of defiance, as well as the overlooker of religious ceremonies,
mm-hmm.
who was the closest thing they came to a blaspheming sheriff in the Aztec religion, because he would overlook all the religious ceremonies, and if it's like, hey, we're trying to cut out this guy's heart, and this mm-hmm. person in the back is hitting on this young Aztec girl, it's like, well, that's...
He's got to get his heart cut out, too. Yeah, sorry.
Looks like I know who to tell for the next sacrifice.
Oh, yeah. Which is very appropriate in a way, because the Catholic Church during the Inquisition, they, mortals, considered themselves the arbiters of blasphemy, whereas for the Aztecs, they quite rightly left it up to the gods themselves to decide what they did and didn't like. I guess it was just more respectful, in a way.
I think so. I think, with time, we've lost a little bit of that respect for our elder gods.
Speaking of that, I think it's time to really get really contemporary, which is a little dangerous.
Right. We've had a lot of discussion about how to approach this topic, mm-hmm. blasphemy, and that's why we've actually stuck to religions that are...
not of our own. Well, not contemporary.
Not contemporary.
Not practiced anymore.
Extinct, you might even say.
Mm-hmm.
Looked at as historical references. But we're moving now into charted territory.
Charting territory.
Charting territory, yes. So,
Kevin and I talked about this, and we decided it would probably be best if, before we discuss these things, that we renounced our gods.
In order to avoid blaspheming.
Or offending them.
Right.
During any point, because if I'm not worshipping you for a period of time, well, that's, what do you have to be mad about?
So.
So, let's do this.
So, yeah, you want to take off your necklace?
Okay, could you put those gloves on?
Yeah, the gloves are going on.
Okay, and here's a little bit of water for you if you want to get that paint off your face.
Yeah, please. Actually, could you get it? Because I can't really see it.
Yeah, sure, hold on.
Oh, it's cold.
Yeah, that's water for you. Okay. Water's cold.
Thank you.
Okay.
So, I defy you.
I denounce you. I don't believe in you.
It was all a lie.
Yeah, it's, smell you later. We should look down, too.
Yeah,
I denounce you.
I denounce you. Defy you.
You're scum to me.
You mean nothing. And you never existed.
Nope, never. Not once. Not even
once. Okay, so I think that's good. I think it's safe for us.
I feel pretty renounced
without blaspheming.
Feel pretty clean.
Okay.
So to take this a step further, we're going to draw a parallel here. It would be really easy for us to discuss or confess blasphemous things that we've done in our lives, but I think it would be more appropriate and more identifiable if we discussed something that everybody was familiar with.
And so we're going to draw this parallel between modern religious blasphemy to the film Footloose.
Starring
Kevin Bacon.
In 1984.
And John Lithgow.
John Lithgow.
Now, the movie Footloose, for those of you who haven't seen it, is about a young lad, Kevin Bacon, who moves to a town in Texas, I believe.
He's from Chicago.
He's from Chicago.
Pretty cool.
He moves to Texas, and
he's just beaming with bacon as he bursts in on the scene.
In the city that he moves in to, they ban dancing, which is something that Kevin Bacon's character loves to do
all the time. He joins the gymnastics team. That's the only outlet he has for dancing, I suppose, in the town where dancing is banned.
Right. But let's discuss this as if it was a real thing.
Yeah.
Dancing is banned in this city
mm-hmm.
by
Minister John Lithgow.
Minister John Lithgow bans it, saying that it's evil and it leads to
Teen
pregnancy and death, because I believe a character in the movie dies
as a result of dancing.
To a dance.
Yeah, John Lithgow's son dies. Sorry if we spoiled the plot for you, but I assume everybody's seen Footloose.
I would be in shock if people had not
seen Footloose.
So, let's say that this was put into action in the town that we live in.
Okay.
The minister bans dancing. Well, how do you do that?
How do you define dancing?
Well, no, how do you ban dancing? The first obvious step would be, well, let's close dance studios, cancel dance classes, cancel galas,
balls,
shindigs,
performances of ballet.
Right. All of those things would have to... any touring dance companies would have to skip over the city. Those are the obvious things, right?
But would you have to ban rhythmic music as well? Because rhythmic music seems to really incite dancing.
It incites dancing.
Almost unconsciously. You tap your foot to a really, you know, an upbeat song.
Right.
And is that dancing?
Well, the thing is, that's... music is not dancing. I mean, it's like the same thing with... magic mushrooms are illegal to buy. However, you can legally buy the spores to grow them. it's kind of a weird loophole.
Yeah, yeah.
But you mentioned something like music obviously has an effect that makes people dance.
An inciting effect.
And we come now to, if this was the case, how would you define what dancing is?
Mm-hmm.
Some people that you may know dance sort of as a nervous tick, similar mm-hmm. to biting your fingernails or cracking your knuckles.
Would, if you really have to go to the bathroom, for instance, you do the pee-pee dance, and does that qualify as dancing?
You mentioned tapping your toes. Would mm-hmm. that qualify as dancing?
If we were listening to the music right now, I might be drumming my hands along the desk. Does that qualify as dancing?
Yeah. What would qualify as dancing? And who would decide?
What is dancing or
the
not?
The person who would decide.
Is it God? Or is it the humans?
Well, I think it would be the person who...
Who banned dancing to begin with.
Yeah, the person who brought the law forward, which in this case would be Minister John Lithgow.
Mm-hmm.
So John Lithgow would...
Seems to really be the authority on blasphemy in the contemporary world.
And by being the authority, would be the one who gets to say, tapping your toe is not dancing. However, shaking your head like that, that is dancing, and you are going to get jail time because of it.
Which brings a certain problem into the mix, because as we talked about, blasphemy is defined as... impious acts towards a god or a religious institution.
Impious acts, words, or thoughts. This is a sin on a level higher than murder or theft or robbery or rape or incest or bestiality. In almost all religions, and including this city in Footloose, dancing is blasphemy on the highest level. I mean, dancing is a sin on the highest level. If you were to dance at all in this city, you would immediately be on a more infamous level of notoriety
than a Pol Pot or a Stalin
or a Hitler, because
you can do the two-step.
Because you can do the two-step.
It's a little strange, and it makes you wonder who decides what offends the gods, and what could the gods possibly be mad about? Because they're omnipotent.
No. The god.
Oh, the god. Oh, I'm sorry. We're talking about this
right.
particular case.
Because, as we mentioned, polytheistic religions usually didn't have blasphemy. It wasn't really until monotheistic religions came around that imposed a jealous, vengeful god, all-powerful, all-knowing, but jealous and vengeful,
really whip people into a fervor and start banning certain acts.
Let me ask you something, Taylor.
Sure.
Let's say that you are all-powerful
right.
and all-knowing and know everything that has happened, everything that is happening, everything that will happen. Right. What do you possibly have to be jealous about?
Makes you really think.
Yeah.
Think about the responsibility being God.
Yet all around the country today, people are being ostracized, sometimes jailed, for doing nothing more than dancing. Shall we,
pick our religions
back up? Yeah, let's pick our religions back up.
I felt a little dirty without it.
Let's just pick them back up. So, I guess we'll look down first.
Sorry. You're wonderful. You play all the right games. You try to be everything to everyone.
So much.
And
for you?
Oh, up.
You are so beautiful to me. Can't you see, God,
you're everything I hope for, everything I need.
I think that's good.
I feel really, really pious again.
I feel I could eat some pie right now.
Let's get that started. Shall we?
Piety cooling on the windowsill, right? Okay. Do you think there's anything else?
No. Unless you count the listener mail.
Oh right, moving right on to listener mail. Mm-hmm. All right, Taylor, I've got a very special listener mail today. This is from Gerald from Ocracoke.
Ocracoke.
Yeah, he lives in the Outer Banks.
Oh.
Okay, so, dear Tay and Kay, my name is Gerald, and I am a chemist. Well, fancy. I am a lover of candy, and I was delighted to listen to last week's podcast. I listened to it so many times, it gave me sugar shock. I think that's supposed to be a joke.
Yeah, I don't find it very funny at all.
But I was disappointed with the candy food pyramid. Specifically, it seems like you neglected to mention the top of the pyramid, pure sugar candies.
Uh-huh.
Which we did not neglect. Did you know that in addition to Sweet Tarts, Nerds, Pixie Sticks, Fun Dip, and Pop Rocks, you and I eat pure sugar candy every day without even knowing it?
Huh.
Anaerobic glycolysis? Is that how that's pronounced? Glycolysis? We'll say
We'll go with glycolysis.
Okay, anaerobic glycolysis is the process by which humans synthesize simple sugar compounds for impurities in the air. Ooh. I guess that means you're never really starving unless you're choking. Thanks for all the laughs, Gerald.
This isn't really a comedy podcast. Don't know what all the laughs are about.
And I can't tell if he's being serious or not.
I feel kind of disrespected, honestly.
Why did
we pick this letter?
It's the only one we got.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. All right.
Well, thanks, Gerald. We will
for your...
keep the laughs coming. Make sure to...
tune in next week when we talk about golf.
Right. Thanks for listening, as always. I'm Kay.
I'm Tay.
This has been Know It All.
With Tay and Kay.
This week's episode brought to you by Gary's Gas, locally sourced gasoline from our home to yours.